arms through with love. I'll never fall again. Said adieu to love. Don't ever call again, for I must have you or no one. And so I'm through with love.
Hi, this is John McKeown. Today I have the pleasure of talking to Surreal Nemé. To people that don't know her, you might not realize I'm saying a young lady's name who is making quite a name for herself. And what world would you call the world that you sing and perform in, Surreal? And
I would say the New York jazz world right now, where I live. For no
one. And, you know, you've been doing this for quite a while. I know it's not appropriate to ask a lady how old she is, but people listening to the Americana Music Show and with you on it might want to know. How old are you?
I just turned 27.
27. How do you feel about that? Do you feel like your career is just starting? Or?
Yeah, I feel like it's starting to bloom.
To bloom?
Yeah.
What makes you say that?
Because these past couple years, I've been traveling a lot more for music than I used to. And also, I graduated from college 2 years ago, so this is when my career started to grow, because I had more time for it.
What college was that?
SUNY Purchase College.
And where is that located?
That's upstate. I mean, not that upstate, but a little north from Manhattan.
Uh-huh. And the Montreux and Monk competitions that you participated in, was that while you were in school? At what age did you do those? And what was the result of them?
The Montreux competition in Switzerland, that was in 2007. So it was during my 4 years at college. And I got the first prize and the public prize. So that was great. And the Monk competition, that was last year. And that helped a lot too for my career, because it's a very popular competition. And I was one of the three finalists.
Well, the Montreux competition apparently takes place in France. Is that correct?
It's in Switzerland.
Oh, Switzerland. See?
Not so far away.
Not too far away. And the Monk competition, where does that take place?
That's in Washington.
Uh-huh. Now, people listening might realize that your accent is a little different than mine. to what do you attribute that?
Well, I'm French. Maybe that's why.
But being French, you also grew up in the Dominican Republic, did you?
Yeah, my mother is Dominican.
Mm-hmm. And did that influence your music? Where was the musical influence that brought you to the jazz world that you're in? Because it's quite eclectic.
I got influence from a bit of everywhere I went, but when I was little, my mom would put salsa in the house, so I think I got a lot of my rhythm from there. Mm-hmm. And also, I grew up in Django Reinhardt's town, which is he's the founder of the gypsy swing style music.
And what town is that?
That's Samois-sur-Seine. It's not too far from Fontainebleau, which is close from Paris. And every year there's a Django festival in his honor. In my hometown, which is a tiny little village, just like in Beauty and the Beast, you know, like the little village with cobblestones. And so gypsies from all over Europe come in their caravans to honor him. And also his family comes, all the Reinhardts come. And it's just guitar playing for like 2 weeks nonstop. And that's how I started singing, when I started hanging out with the gypsies. And one of them was teaching me the guitar, and in exchange, I was teaching him to read and write. And one day, they asked me to learn a song, because they knew I took English at school. So they gave me an old Django record and said, "Surreal, learn this song so we can sing it." And so I sang it around the campfire. and the song was Sweet Sue, and ever since they called me Sweet Sue.
Well, for those that are listening that don't know who Django Reinhardt is, he's often referred to as a gypsy guitarist. Would that be correct?
Mm-hmm.
And he's French, and he played music, even though he only had a very facile use of only two fingers on his left hand, he played things that are not equaled today by guitar players.
Yeah.
He could play things that were not only clever and fast, but were musically hot.
Yeah.
And Django created, if I can relate it to our American audience, although it's a singer that comes to mind, it's John Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Buffett, the islands. Django Reinhardt, the hot jazz clubs of France.
Yeah.
And Django's name defines a whole era of music. That what age were you when you went, gee, I like that?
I was 14.
You were 14 in France?
Yep. Yeah, and I really was fascinated with the gypsies. At first, it was their way of living, the way they live day to day, like literally. And I was following them everywhere, filming them when they played their guitar all the time. And the gypsies break a lot of strings, you know. And so I have a lot of footage of gypsies playing and then breaking strings. And then quick, the little brother takes the guitar and fixes it, gives it back to the older brother. And there's 12 guitars around the campfire and they just keep going. It's such a driving music. It makes you want to stomp your feet.
Well, you say getting their lifestyle and the way they live. How would you describe that to somebody that has no idea? Because gypsy just sounds like some guy that pulls a wagon around and goes somewhere. And I mean, people don't know. They know the word, but they don't quite know what the lifestyle is. You've lived it or you've been around it.
Yeah, it's a culture. It's a completely different culture, and I was really fortunate to be able to actually like go in the campsite and go in the caravans, because they don't. A lot of non-gypsies can't go in there. It's not. It's like a different world, and they're people that are so natural and kind of primitive in a way, because they've never been to school. None of my friends have gone to school, and so they're not formatted like we can sometimes be. You know, when they feel something, they just express it right now and then. When they want to do something, they just do it right now and then. They're really bohemians like that.
Did they read music?
No.
So all that hot stuff they play. Usually people say, yeah, jazz has 1,000 chords played for 10 people, and country music has 3 chords played for 1,000 people.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily true. When you get into the world, the eclectic world has quite a big audience. And the wellspring of where a lot of hot jazz came from, would this be correct to say it came from not just Django, but the whole gypsy culture and a bunch of people that didn't bother reading music, they just played it from their soul? Would that be a good description?
Yeah, well, their music is part of their life. They can't live without it. It's part of the culture. It's like for French people, eating or wine and cheese, you know? it's just part of their life. As soon as they're little, they get a guitar in their hands. The boys get a guitar in their hands, and this is what you're going to do, you know?
So you spent time in the gypsy camps, right?
Yes.
What happened when you woke up?
When I woke up?
In the morning. I'm in a gypsy camp, although only I've never had the pleasure of being there. So if I'm going to go, and I want to know what happens when I get up in the morning.
Well, it's a very macho world, and in the morning, the women, they clean the caravans, like really clean them. Every day, every single day, the caravan is totally cleaned, even on the outside.
Uh-huh.
And the boys are just hanging out, practicing the guitar, And I mean, that's in Samoa, because when they're in Samoa for the Django Festival, they're kind of on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
But during the winter, they go to like the suburbs of Paris, and they do door-to-door selling kind of sewing equipment,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, buttons, or the guys do door-to-door and repair stuff in the house, or they cut wood, or they do music for money, and that's basically what they do. But mostly just hanging out. I remember the first time how I met them, basically, how, because they were there every year, and they have a very bad reputation, so every year people kind of stay away from them, the townspeople. And this one year I was getting some bread at the boulangerie, and I had my shiny red bicycle with me. And five gypsies came to me and said, "Hey, can we borrow your bike?" And I was like so scared, and I was like, I don't know. And they're like, come on, we'll drive down, we'll ride down with you. And so we ended up, five of us on my bike, riding down the cobblestone street
That must have been fun.
And yeah, and so since then I became really friends with them. And so the townspeople would tell my parents, "We saw your daughter with some gypsies, you have to be careful and everything." So my parents at first were kind of forbidding me to go out with them, so I'd still go out through the window at night. Because that's when the campfire started burning, and all the guitars were around the campfire, and the women dancing and the children running, and that's when I really wanted to be there every night. But
so what drew you there? Was it the lifestyle in general or the actual music?
At first it was their lifestyle. Because at first I wasn't like, I loved music, but it wasn't a part of my life like it is now. It was something that I was always playing in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Music was always a part of my life, but I was never like a musician toward it in that way, in that sense that I actually really, really listened to it, you know? And so I was just obsessed with their way of being. Also, I felt like they kind of had a kind of Dominican way to their way of being, which was very homey and welcoming. And so then, since I was hanging out with them all the time and they would play guitar all the time, I started more understanding the music. And then when I started playing guitar with them, I was obsessed with the music, and that's what drove me to singing.
You were gone.
Gone. I was totally gone. And when my parents understood that it was the music that was attracting me to them, then they understood that it was a good thing.
Had you sung much at home prior to that?
I had a little karaoke machine.
Uh-huh.
And I had fun with that. But other than that, no.
Well, what was the first time you went in front of people on your own? You've had this background, a teenager being influenced by the music and the lifestyle of the gypsies. You've learned a few songs. And at some point in time, you've walked on a stage and you went, "Oh, I like doing things that people clap at." Do you remember that moment? Was there
a
time?
Yes. And it was actually pretty scary, because one of the first stages that I've ever been on was the Django Reinhardt Festival stage in my hometown. And that's like 3,000 people,
mm-hmm.
audience. And this very famous gypsy guitar player, his name is Roman, he invited me up with his big band to sing two songs. And that was it. I was hooked off the stage. I just wanted to get back up there as soon as I could.
What age was that?
I was 16.
Wow. And you were still in school in France?
Mm-hmm.
What was it like to go to school the next time you went, whether next week, the next week, or next day? Did you go to school with all that in your head and trying to tell people about it, or just keep it to yourself?
Oh, of course. I always had all of that in my head. I was even kind of starting to talk like the gypsies, which was a very bad thing. I was just in my own world, because my friends, they were not, they didn't know what I was living because I was really the only one that was allowed in the gypsy campsite. And so it was like I had two lives because I had all my gypsy friends at home and then at school, all my other friends. And so everyone was wondering, where is she getting this accent from? And I really, I just couldn't help it. But it went away eventually. I always had that in my head, and I was always telling them about it and showing them the footage.
You say the footage. You mean video footage of you in the camps?
Yeah, I filmed everything. I filmed them doing their laundry, washing dishes. I love their way of living.
Do you miss it now that you're in Brooklyn?
Well, I don't miss it so much because now it's I'm at a different stage with them. I'm not like the little girl that's obsessed with them, and now I'm like a part of the family. And every single time I go back there, that's where I stay. I stay with my best friend in the caravan, and we know each other really well now. Him and his family, and David Reinhardt, he's one of my very good friends too. He's Django's grandson. And we play a lot together, too. Like, when I go there and I have gigs, I call him. And
When you have gigs in France?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you play in New York City. You play at the Cupping Room a lot, I hear.
I'm at the Cupping Room every single Saturday. It's been 5 years.
And how does that go? Is it drawing a lot of people?
Yeah. At first, when it started, it was difficult because it's not a concert place. It's like a bar restaurant. And it was just bass, drums, and voice. But now after a couple years, the word started spreading that this was going on every Saturday, and now it's packed every Saturday. There's so many friends coming to sit in. I got trumpet players, guitar players coming to sit in. I have tap dancers, jazz dancers coming. Saturday, I think a friend of mine that does beatboxing is going to come. It's really a great vibe. It's a great place for art.
That's really neat when an artist such as Surreal starts drawing people that want to come and be around and associate, because it's an indication that artistically she's somebody you people should be listening to. This is the Americana Music Show. This is John McEwen talking to Surreal M.A., kind of from France, kind of from the Dominican Republic, but living in Brooklyn, talking about the Cupping Room gig she's been doing for 5 years. And Surreal, it sounds like so many people are starting to show up that pretty soon you won't have to go and they'll just send you a check.
No, the Cupping Room is like my home.
Ah, the new gypsy camp in Brooklyn. Is it in Brooklyn or Manhattan?
It's in Soho, Manhattan.
Oh, great. What cross streets?
West Broadway and Broome Street.
Oh, yeah. Good area to be in.
Yeah, it's great.
You know, the way you describe the gypsy lifestyle, I've been in a band for 45 years and done 8,000 shows everywhere in the country.
The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band?
That's it. You probably have not too familiar with it, but I wouldn't expect you to be. But the point is, I can stand at an airport looking at four or five departure screens, and sometimes I only find one or two towns that I haven't been to. Sometimes there's six or seven out of those four screens listing 100 places.
Yeah.
And those are places that I want to go because I haven't been there yet. But in those travels, I find that there's a lot of worlds of music that stay insular. They stay within themselves. And it's not that they're unfriendly, but sometimes they're not welcoming, as the gypsies were to you. But there is one American style that comes to mind, Zydeco and Cajun people in Louisiana, which are also have an extensive French background. They're like that. They're their own people. Everybody's welcome. Come to the Fado Do and come dance to the music. Oh, you play the fiddle? Here, play with us, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever spent any time around the Cajun or Zydeco world?
No, I really want to go. I really want to go to New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, you should be on the New Orleans Jazz Festival, it sounds like. I hope that's in the future. You have 4 records out, and where can somebody find out about those? Your website.
Website, surrealmusic.com, but surreal spelled like my name, so C-Y-R-I-L-L-E. Yeah, surrealmusic.com, and there's you can listen to it, and you can also purchase it through iTunes or through PayPal.
Uh-huh. Do the gypsies have music that is available in that manner, or do they play that way? I mean, by play, do they participate that way in the worldwide music?
You mean like if they have like a website or something?
Yeah, I guess what I'm asking, is there a favorite gypsy group that's similar to the Django Reinhardt band that, you know, in bluegrass music, you have groups that are traditional, and you have groups that are progressive, and you have, you know, and there's a lot of world of bluegrass band styles, and they're all getting pretty fairly internet savvy. How about the gypsies?
Well, there's some really great players, but as far as like bands are concerned, there's not like a hot club. Like, there's really great bands, but they evolved. It's not like too old school. There's this really amazing band. It's called Les Doigts de l'Homme. They're really great. They're super good. And here in America, there's actually a good Django style band. It's called the Hot Club of Detroit.
Ah, are they only in Detroit?
They're everywhere. I play with them very often. I was there at the Detroit Jazz Festival with them last weekend. But they played at the Django Fest in San Francisco in like June, and they travel around a lot.
Well, you have 4 albums out. When was the first one made? What age were you? Well, if you're only 27 now, I wouldn't expect that it would be.
It was in like 2007.
So you've knocked out 4 albums in 4 years, basically.
Yep.
Is there a record company involved?
No, every time. The first one was part of the prize that I got for the Montreux competition was to do a record for free.
You must have won.
Yeah. So I did that that first record, Surreal MA and the Surreal Band.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one, I recorded it in Brazil in one day with Diego Figueiredo, his guitar player that I actually met him at the Montreux competition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a duet album. Then the third one is also a duet album with Diego, because him and I are really, like, we have this connection that's really incredible. And that's on a label, but it's not my label. That record is on the label Venus Records, which is a Japanese label. Mm-hmm. And the very last one is a Live at Smalls record that I recorded live at Smalls Jazz Club in New York City. And it's on the label Smalls Live. And it's got Roy Hargrove on it, Joel Fromm. It's really an amazing record. I love the power of live music. You can really
hear it. It sounds like your albums have had nice progression and who's involved and they're keeping up with your career and you're performing more and all that. If somebody wanted to book Surreal, M.A., I guess you'd go to your website.
Yep, under contact.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an agency that books you?
Yeah, here in the U.S., his name is Steve Frumkin. So
Steve Frumkin.
Yep, it's on my website.
And does he have an agency name?
JWP Agency. JWP.
Uh-huh. Well, that should be easy to find through your website. And since one of the purposes of this show is to spread the word and the notes, it's good to get all that out there. Again, Surreal Music, C-Y-R-I-L-L-E, music.com. Tells the whole story. Surreal, I'm curious. I've often been known to ask questions that were, what? You asked that question? maybe it's because I'm a musician. I don't know what. But you're a very pretty woman. And does that does that impede your, in other words, that's just a fact. Anybody can look at the picture. It's obvious you take care to present yourself in a way that will make you look good, although from the pictures I've seen, that would be hard to make you look bad. But does that get in the way of a serious music career? In other words, I've known Dolly Parton for years, and in a discussion with her once, in talking about her attributes, saying, well, John, I got to use anything to get attention to my music, and sometimes it takes, you know, this is like back in the 70s. And some people dress a certain way. This is a general question about your overall look is one that you care to present well on stage. And do you think that you looking that way has been helpful, or sometimes you have to convince people that you really can sing?
I never even thought of that or gave the slightest thought to anything like that. I just think about the singing. I mean, of course, when I have a show, I put on a nice dress, but everyone would do that, I think.
The reason I bring this up is I very much respect the fact that you respect your work enough to put on a nice dress and to look good, because I come from this world of music where sometimes you can't distinguish the lead guitar player from the stage roadie that's standing 3 feet from them.
Oh, really?
You know what I mean? Because they're wearing torn Levi's and an old T-shirt, and they're not facing the audience.
Well, it's a rock and roll world. It's different than the jazz world, I guess.
Well, this is kind of country, hippie, country, rock, jazz, whatever. Yes, it is different. So you do not only a great presentation of music, but you really dress the part well. And I think that befits, that honors the music you're doing quite well.
Well, thank you, but it's really more for me. I like wearing nice dresses. I'm not really thinking if the audience is going to like this dress or not. I'm a girl, and I like clothes. I like shoes.
That's good. Girls that are singers and performers that didn't pay attention to that, I think it will benefit your career, actually. I always believe that no matter who the performer is, if people come to see them, only half the people really came to see them, and they brought the other half.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, honey, go to the Grateful Dead reunion with me, and I'll take you to see Barry Manilow next week. You know,
yeah.
I hate Barry Manilow, but I'll take you.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, I've seen jazz players that look like they were the waitress or the waiter crew in the restaurant, and they walk up and start playing, and it puts more importance on the music. Flatten Scruggs used to wear really cool clothes. Some of the classic people that we both like to emulate paid attention to the showbiz side. What's the Surreal MA show like? What music do you cover?
Well, it all depends if I'm playing with Diego or if I'm playing in France with the Gypsies. But here in New York, the Surreal Band, when I play with the Surreal Band, it's basically what I want is that people have fun. I want people to leave the place and be like, oh, I had a fun night, you know. I want them to be entertained. And so we play jazz, we play some funky stuff. I do a lot of loop pedal, which is this little machine that I have that I can record my voice in lifetime, and it loops it, so I can record another voice on top of that. And
yeah, do you scat with that?
Yeah.
Cool.
I do a lot of improvisation like that. And yeah, basically, my favorite part of performing is the improv style. The not knowing what's going to happen once you're there on stage. You have no idea what's going to happen. That's what happens when I invite dancers up. We usually do improvisation. And so I kind of sing to what she's dancing, and she kind of dances to what I'm singing. And this is what I love. I just love creating on the spot so that every single show is different.
That's a good thing. And what has been some of the best shows that you've done in that? In your career, which I guess it's spanning about six or seven years so far?
Yeah.
Has there been one other than the Monk and the Montreux competition that you won? When I think of New York gigs for me and my band. There was a night at the club. When I think of gigs with my band in New York, for instance, there was a night at the Bottom Line Club, which is now closed, that I always get people to sit in. I like that same edge you're talking about. And one night, the people sitting in was the banjo player that was my mentor, a guy named Doug Dillard, a fiddle player named John Hartford, Linda Ronstadt, Emmylou Harris, the lead guitar player, Jimmy McCulloch from Wings, who happened to be sitting in the audience, and we got him up to play. And we must have done an hour with this group of people, and it was just fun. Has there been a night for you that really stood out at the Cupping Room? So people, I just want people to know that when you go to the Cupping Room, you're going to be as much entertained as they are, because there's something that's happening, like, oh, back in April. So is there one that stands out for you?
Well, you know, how good the show is depends also on the audience, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just who's on stage, but also it's the energy in the room. And so especially for a place like the Cupping Room, which is not a place where people come to listen, first you got to capture them. You got to say, hi, hey, this music playing and it's good music. So I know you're not here for that, but check it out. And then if you have a captured audience, I mean, any show is going to be great, you know. When you have people that are there listening to you, it just makes you want to push your limits and really, like, give everything you can to them. So there's a lot of nights that stand out at the Cupping Room, because it's just a show that I do every single Saturday. So I couldn't tell you, like, a specific date, but I do have memories where I just, after the last song, we're just, I feel like so light and on a cloud, you know, because of how great everything was with the dancers and the guy that came and sat in with his guitar and this and that.
Do you sit at home sometimes going, oh, I can't wait to try this on stage. Oh, I think this song people will really like. Oh, I bet if I sang it this way, it would work better. Do you think about what's coming up in that manner?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm a musician, so that's what I do. But I don't think like that too much. I just think what I want to hear, and then I do the music that I want to play. You know, I don't force myself to.
I know a lot of musicians that just go to work, and we played a bunch of songs, and even some known ones, even people that I've admired for years. I remember one guy that's still out there playing, and I asked him, so was it fun playing in Europe? He goes, just another darn job to me. You know, like, oh, I'm sorry I asked.
Oh, that's awful.
You know, but when he went on stage, he was great, and his darn job was pretty darn good.
Yeah, no, to me, I feel like we are so lucky as musicians to be able to, sometimes even after a really amazing gig, I'm like packing up and I say, okay, goodbye. And they're like, don't you want to get paid? And I just forgot, you know, I forgot that that happened to me in France. You know, I was saying goodbye to everybody. And the bass player is like, Surreal, don't we get paid? And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So I asked her, oh yeah, we need the money for it. Yeah, sometimes when it's a really great show, you can't even believe that you're getting paid at the end of it.
Well, where do you want it to go, Surreal? I mean, is this the only thing you do? You know, many musicians over the years that I've known, that some were successful in the festival circuit in the summer, but in the winter they had to go back to that other, the job. Is this your pursuit in life? Is this how you make your way?
No, my job is my music. You know, I don't want to have to do anything else than that.
And where do you want that to take you? Where do you envision it being possible? What is your dream? What is the thing that can happen to you that 3 years from now you'll go, I did it?
I really don't know. You know, I think for that I'm kind of like the gypsies. I really just live for the day. The only dream I have is to be doing what I'm doing right now, to be doing music. I guess, of course, I'd like to be able to do more gigs, be more well-known so that I can easier to find concerts everywhere. And I guess if I have to think about in the future when one day I'd like to have a family, then I'd like to make more money than right now, so I could live in a not a little apartment in Brooklyn. But as long as I have the music with me, I'm living my dream.
Mm-hmm. How about Birdland? Have you ever thought of playing there, or have you?
I'm going to play there in November, actually, for a whole week.
Oh, great. A week. How cool.
Yeah, for Thanksgiving week. A whole week at Birdland with the Surreal Band.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's good. And how about the Indigo on Broadway?
Oh, I've never even heard of this place.
Place where Les Paul played every Monday for years.
Oh, are you talking about the Iridium?
Oh, thank you. The Iridium on Broadway, yes.
Yeah, I had a date there. I played there a couple times with another band. And I'm going to get I had a date there, but I had to cancel it for some reason. I'm going to reschedule it for 2012. So.
That'd be good. You put a picture of you, French gypsy jazz singer, on that street, and people, and with that music playing that you so wonderfully do, and people from out of town go to the Iridium just to go to that club.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't go much further. Pardon?
Same for Birdland. Birdland is also next to Times Square.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's very popular for tourists.
So you're going to be at the Cupping Room every Saturday, which is down in Broome Street, down in the Village somewhere. And in November, you'll be at the famous Birdland, and that's a great run, and I wish you well with that.
Thank you.
And anything you'd care to add? Because I think I'm really glad to know more about Surreal MA and your dedication to your music. And it sounds like if people go to see you sing and play, now, do you play the guitar when you're up there?
No. No, I concentrate on the voice.
Uh-huh. So when people go see you perform, not only is your music great, but the people that have been surrounding you are at the top of the field.
They're great musicians and great people.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Surreal. Thank you, Surreal. I admire your dedication. I've seen it before in many people, and those people have had great success in their pursuit of something they love. And I think that you will, too, and I wish you the best. This is John McEwen on the Americana Music Show, visiting with Surreal MA and CYRILLEMusic.com. You got to find out about this young lady. And thank you, Surreal.
Me rappelle les amours mortes devant le feu qui s'éteint. Ce soir, c'est une chanson d'automne dans la maison qui frissonne. Et je pense aux jours lointains. Que reste-t-il? Reste-t-il de ces beaux jours? Une photo, vieille photo de ma jeunesse. Que reste-t-il des billets doux, des mois d'avril, des rendez-vous, un souvenir qui me poursuit sans cesse. Bonheur fané, cheveux au vent, baisers volés, rêves émouvants. Que reste-t-il de tout cela? Dites-le-moi. Un paysage bien caché, et dans un nuage, ce cher visage de mon passé.
bonheur fané, cheveux au vent, baisers volés, rêves émouvants. Que reste-t-il de tout cela? Dites-le-moi. Un petit village, un vieux clocher, un paysage si bien caché, et dans un nuage.